Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Dad.
So today we're going to be discussing probably the most disliked diagnostic procedure there is. And the reason we're discussing it today is I recently had this procedure done, actually just a couple of days ago. But first, what we're talking about is colonoscopies.
I bet it's not the most disliked. It's the most
common.
Disliked
procedure, commonly. Right? There's probably diagnostic. Actually, I might have had one where if you have to have a catheter put up in you,
they don't put you out for that.
They don't. Right.
So usually the anticipation is worse and the prep is worse than the actual procedure when it comes to colonoscopies.
Exactly. It is all in the prep. So I'm curious, do you find your patients reluctant to get colonoscopies?
Yeah, for sure.
They push back, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, just because no one wants to deal with the prep. And some people like can't. Sorry, you're going to hear my almost 2-month-old in the background a little bit.
That is fine. that for our listeners who aren't aware, Nicole had a baby, a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
Her name is Molly Rose. So this is Molly's first appearance on the podcast.
It's not a cat. Didn't get a cat.
Yes.
So, I mean, you have to, there's a few reasons why it's not as easy as just going and getting your mammogram. Cause you know, you have to take probably a day off of work. You need someone who can, bring you and pick you up, and you have to, do the prep the night before. And the prep is what no one likes to do. But the nice thing is, you know, tell people, you explain to people the statistics and then what a colonoscopy can do and prevent for you, because it's diagnostic, but it's also treatment, right? If they find something at the time, so you're knocking both of those out, and explain what it's like to find a colon cancer later on. They usually, you know,
they come around.
Yeah. And the preps are getting better. It's not like 2 gallons of junk that you have to drink. Some people literally would say that they like threw up. They couldn't take it down or keep it down. I don't think anything was that bad, but they have lower volume preps now. So
yeah, we're gonna. Let's talk about. So the reason I started having colonoscopies when I was maybe 40 or so, because my uncle on my mother's side had died from colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
When my mother and her sisters were tested soon after that, they all had polyps. None of them had cancer, but they all had polyps.
Yeah.
And my grandmother on my mother's side did not die of colon cancer, but she had colon cancer. Mm-hmm. When she passed away, they found it during the autopsy, and I didn't remember this, but my mother just reminded me that my great grandmother on my mother's side also passed away from colon cancer.
Wow. So that is a very strong family history.
So when I went in when I was 40, there were polyps.
Yep.
That if I had waited, at the time the guideline was 50.
Right.
So if I had waited till I was 50, then
good chance that
it would have metastasized or progressed.
Or became, because not all polyps are cancer.
Right.
So keep that in mind. Not all polyps eventually turn into cancer. Not all polyps are precancers, but some of them certainly could have been.
Right. So that now they have reduced the recommended age for the first for your first colonoscopy from 50 to 45, right?
Yeah, so it's kind of scary statistics. I'm sure you've seen the information out there recently of these reports that have come out and how cancer is increasing in young adults significantly over the last like 5 years, but we're not talking about since COVID. We're talking pre-COVID. This is the data, because everyone was like, oh yeah, it's the vaccine. It's the vaccine. The data is coming from before the vaccine, before COVID, before the pandemic. So it was like from 2018 to 2020, basically, the incidence of cancer in young people is rising significantly, and no one really knows why. But one of the cancers in particular is younger people.
One of the cancers in particular is colon cancer.
Rising in young adults, yes.
Rising in young adults. Yeah. Well, that actor passed away. Yeah. I want to say he was in his 30s, maybe.
I think he was in his early 40s.
Early 40s, okay.
But it's not unheard of to see someone in their 20s or 30s today get diagnosed with colon cancer.
And they have no idea why.
No, we don't know why. We don't know why.
I'm gonna surmise it has something to do with ultra processed foods.
Yeah, I guess that's what people are saying. You know, there's the ultra processed foods, but then also the, you know, all the other things,
potential carcinogens, microplastics,
Just scary.
Gotcha. It is
because colon cancer is always, usually what I will tell people is, you know, it is not something you want to find late. You know, it spreads, you know, pretty quickly, and to treat it, if you're going to have surgery, you know, you're taking out part of your colon, which can be substantial. And with the colonoscopy, you're looking for precancerous polyps, hopefully early enough to where, you know, you're taking the polyps out and not even doing a colonoscopy to necessarily find cancer, right? You're doing the colonoscopy to find precancerous polyps
and get rid of them.
Yeah. Not even deal with cancer. But I think I looked it up, and there's like, there were close to 200,000 new cases of colon cancer a year. And so colon cancer includes colon and rectum. So it's rectal, but the majority of these are colon. And then I would say like a fourth of them are usually rectal cancers. And it's split pretty 50-50 between men and women. And it's the third most common cancer, second or third in men and women. So the most common for women is breast cancer. I think most common for men is
lung
cancer. And I think second for women is lung cancer and then colon cancer. Mm-hmm. But regardless, it's one of the most common. And then the mortality rate is a big concern with it. So in 2024, let's say there were like around 150,000 new cases of colon cancer last year.
2023.
Yes. Yeah, sorry. The about a quarter, no, a third of those end in death. In that same year. So in a year where there's 150,000 colon cancer cases, in that same year, 50,000, there's 50,000 deaths due to
deaths.
Well,
and I think the other piece of it is like, what is the 5-year survival,
right,
you know, expectation? And it's, you know, yep, I'm sure it's less than 10%.
I'm sure. Let's see, what is the 5-year? But that's such a hard thing, because if you find it early, it's just a completely different, you're dealing with a completely different beast. So right, if you find something early, you take it out, it's gone, period.
Well, right. The question is, what's the 5-year survival rate on colon cancer that has metastasized?
Right. Yeah. That would be,
that's low.
Yeah.
And because I think with my uncle, it had gone to his liver, and then it goes downhill. So,
yeah,
you talk about some of your patients being reluctant to have the procedure done. I am never reluctant, because right, I visited my uncle in the hospital in the latter stages, you know, kind of days before his death.
Yeah.
If you witness that, then you will not, you know, in fact, for me, the last time I went, I think I had one polyp, but it wasn't big, whatever. So They had been telling me to come back every 3 years.
Yeah.
But the last time I'd had it done in 2020, they said five years.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks ago, I'm talking to my brother and he's like, oh yeah, well, I'm going every 3 years because I ain't taking it. I get to thinking about it. I'm like, okay, I'll go early.
Yeah.
And actually, so when I was in getting, you know, all prepared for the procedure, the doctor comes in, who's going to do the procedure. He's looking at my chart and he's like, why are you here? You know, two years early, or whatever. And I'm like, and I explained it. And he's like, okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But even then, I think his perspective was, yeah, you're a little overly cautious. And so they found on me 1 4-millimeter polyp.
That's tiny.
Tiny. So again, the recommendation was 5 years, and I think I'll probably follow it. I'll probably follow it.
He's because, like, again, like I told you last time.
Yes,
exactly. Things look good.
Well, it wasn't the same doc. The doc that previously had done it had retired.
We kind of changed. It's similar to to pap smears for women. We used to do them every year on everybody, and then the testing got a little bit better and a little bit different, to where if you were completely normal on these two tests that they did from your pap smear, you could stretch it to 5 years. But there are people out there who are so used to their yearly pap that they're like, no, I'm not going 5 years, just because they don't quite understand, you know, the why behind it. And that it takes, if you're clean on this day, it takes this amount of time for you to develop HPV, to then develop any, for it to stick around, for them to develop any abnormal cells, you know, that sort of thing. So if yours between, if they looked at it from 5 years ago to 5 years the last time you did it, and they saw kind of what was there, it's all guideline based, you know.
Right. But, well, and I had read somewhere that it takes about 10 years for a polyp to go from, you know,
right,
almost, you know, just starting to colon cancer. So
right.
10 years. So 5 years seems pretty conservative. So,
yep.
So.
Yep.
So let's talk about, you mentioned it before, the prep, because that's the piece that, you know, people have problem with, because the procedure itself is, you know, piece of cake. It's quick. But you do have to take the day off. One question on the procedure. So when I do the procedure, you know, they give me propofol and I'm out, and then I wake up in the recovery room. But my brother was telling me that he's awake. He's actually watching the monitor as they're doing the colonoscopy.
Yeah.
Is he pulling my leg, or is that the way
sedation for colonoscopy? I mean, technically you wouldn't have to even be totally, I mean, it's not a procedure where that's so painful you need to be out for it, right? That's not why you do it. You do sedation because it's uncomfortable, right? People don't want to be like awake during this. And some people are getting a colonoscopy and an upper endoscopy, meaning it's going down the throat and looking into the stomach.
Right.
And no one's going to be able to really tolerate that without being sedated. So usually what people are getting is moderate sedation, which is, we call it like conscious sedation. And you're relaxed, you're awake, but you don't remember anything. That's what people are generally getting.
I think that's what I got
the
first time I had it done. They explained it. They give you an amnesiac.
Kind of,
so you don't remember. But I got propofol, so which puts you under that, right?
Yeah. Well, not totally, because not completely, because if you're completely under, like when I had surgery, propofol is part of it, but you need a breathing tube.
Right.
So you're breathing on your own perfectly fine. You just probably had a little bit of deeper sedation. Gotcha. So difference in the amount and how it affected you.
Yeah. I mean, once they start putting it in your
you're
ID,
you're gone.
I must admit, I enjoy that going under feeling.
It was very weird. And that's why Michael Jackson got into the trouble that he got.
I know.
But I remember when I had my surgery, that's the first thing. They're like, you're going to start to feel sleepy and then you're out.
Gone.
Yep.
There we go. So in terms of the prep, you know, one piece of the prep that people don't like, obviously, is you got to fast the day before. I had mine done at 7 a.m. So there's a little bit different, like the timing is a little different if you have it done in the early in the morning versus an afternoon one. But I always go for early morning. So you got to fast the whole day prior, which, you know, if you're not used to fasting,
that's hard for anybody. Yep. Is hard.
And then it's the, you're right. You have to, for me, it was starting at 6 p.m. Start drinking this fluid that, you know, gives you very watery diarrhea and cleans you out, basically.
Also not fun.
But you're exactly right that that they now make the formulas so there's less to drink. I think it's like 16 ounces instead of a gallon so. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. But so a couple of things. One is, what was I going to say?
Tablets and solutions but most people are using the solutions, not tablets.
Well, when I went to the pharmacy, they said that I had two prescriptions. Uh-huh. And I'm like, really? And they said, but yeah, one's like $5 and one's $60. And I said, what's the difference?
Right.
Well, the $60 one has less, you get to drink less. I'm like, give me that one. that stuff isn't pleasant. I mean, it's not horrible, but it's not pleasant.
And
you know, it's flavored obviously, but it's got this saltiness to it and it just kind of sits in your stomach and you know, and then it does its stuff.
Yeah.
So you've heard of the, I read about the pills, but they weren't an option for me.
They're usually not, especially it's mostly insurance, I think too.
Yeah.
What insurance is going to cover. And the last thing that a gastroenterologist wants to see when they do a colonoscopy is an incomplete prep.
Yes.
So I wonder if part of it too is the gastroenterology, the GI doc's preference and what they know works versus not messing with, you know, something that in their experience is less likely to give you a full clean out.
Right. Well, and it's just right because it's so new, but it has been approved. The pills have been approved. And I did read a research report that indicated that they were effective and maybe even more effective because I think I read like upwards of a third of the people who are going prepping for a colonoscopy don't complete all the full prep.
Yeah, which that is, you know, an issue in and of itself because then usually what they'll have you do is follow up a year later. But because they have, who's to say there's not something more there. So you really want to make sure that you're able to do the prep and follow the instructions and the regimen correctly, whatever the prep is.
Right. Well, and for me then, because I was having the procedure done at 7, I had to get to the facility at 6. I had to get up at 2 a.m. to take the second round of it. Needless to say, that was a long day.
But then I tell people, for a lot of people, they don't have to do that again for 10 years.
Right. Right.
And
for 5 years. I mean, that's 2029. So,
yeah.
I always say, it beats the alternative, which for me, you know, if I didn't have it would probably be colon cancer at some point and dying of, you know, the way I saw my uncle die. So I got no issues.
The frustrating thing is always when the medical societies say that you really should start screening for colon cancer at 45. I bet you GI doctors start their own personal screening at like 40.
40.
Because of what they see. Biased for sure to some degree. But you look at the data and they came out with the recommendation to screen earlier, long before insurance, like quote unquote, approved it or covered it. It's just so frustrating because for a while we were telling people the recommendation is to start at 45, but insurance isn't going to cover it that. So you'd have to pay out of pocket. And think about how, you know, we're literally letting insurance, you know, dictate
clinical
when
procedures.
We know. Yeah. But so I don't remember when it changed, but it did change to where adults 45 to 49, that's when there's obviously a net benefit to starting colon cancer screening at that age. If you have a strong family history, and the strong family history is a little bit gray. So it used to be a first degree relative with colon cancer. And a first degree relative is like your mom, dad, brother, or sister. And if they had colon cancer, you started 10 years before they were diagnosed.
Right.
But that's a little fuzzy now because, you know, once you have people doing this, so for example, you, if you hadn't done your early screening, maybe you would have had colon cancer. Maybe I would be getting screened at 40. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You're doing it early, so you're not getting colon cancer. So usually when you
right. talk so about, if I never get it, then
then I you, start at 45 or 50 and then I get
it's
it.
It's too late.
So right. I think what usually happens is you have a conversation about family history. And it's not as rigid as like it has to be a first degree, you know, family member.
So given I'm just curious, so given your family history, would you start at 40?
I would probably push to start at 40. Yeah. I mean, honestly, with how scary it is to think about young people getting cancer, I would do it today, you know, if there were no other, you know, roadblocks. Yeah. But I would probably say it with strong family history and that you had polyp at, what did you say?
40.
And the rest of the family history that I would be a 40-year-old person.
And, but insurance might not cover that, or they might.
Yeah. Right? So the GI doc would have to, you know, make sure they had proper documentation on the family history, and then it would be, hopefully they cover it. If not, it's not a cheap procedure. You know, I think out of pocket for my patients who don't have insurance, the cheapest price I've seen is $1,600, but that's everything from the sedation to the procedure to the pathology even for yeah. So it's not too bad.
Well, I'm going to, I've got a high deductible plan, so I'm going to see,
yeah, let me know.
I'm going to see that cost, you know, one way or the other. Yeah. I can't remember if I saw it prior. I don't think I did in 2020 because that I had the neck surgery going on.
Then. Well, actually I think no. Yeah. The Affordable Care Act, assuming you have a typical insurance plan, which you do, the Affordable Care Act said that the insurance plans have to cover the screening services recommended by the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, which is the guidelines that are used to set who needs a mammogram and when, who needs a, you know, CT scan for lung cancer screening and when, who needs a colonoscopy and when. Those have to be covered at cost. So you should not have to pay for that at all.
So you're saying that
even
with should be no out of pocket.
Yes, it is not. It regardless of your high deductible plan, it is a covered service regardless.
I got to take another look at that because I think I read that the deductible applies on my, but I'll take another look at that.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's different because of the timing that you did it.
I don't think so.
You did it a year early.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But in general, so even people with like who need a mammogram, if they have a high deductible plan, you should not be getting charged for that mammogram because that is what the Affordable Care Act, that was part of the Affordable Care Act, was they need to be covering it in full, those kind of things, regardless of your deductible.
Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I will double check that and I will let you know for sure. Anything else on this topic that we haven't covered that would be relevant?
I mean, I just think it's most relevant to make sure you're talking to your doctor about when you should be screened, because not everybody, you know, knows that it's 45 instead of 50, and not everybody is actually 45. Some people it should be earlier. I think the younger people getting colorectal cancer, I think the statistics said it's an alarming incident rate increase of colon cancer. It said, let me find it here. Yeah, a rise each year by 1-2% in individuals under the age of 55. And this trend in a rise every year of 1-2% has been going on since the mid-1990s.
Wow. Right. So that now at this point, that's 30 years hence.
Yeah.
We're talking, a 40-50% rise in incidence, which still, that's a huge relative rise in incidence.
Right.
The absolute rise,
right.
is a little, obviously, more moderate, but still in something that is as lethal as it is, right. is significant.
And don't right. ignore symptoms. Even if you're young, don't ignore symptoms. Just go to the doctor.
Right. Right.
And what I've noticed is, honestly, like if there's someone who's relatively young or not young, even in the older population, and there's not a very clear answer to whatever that symptom is, like a little bit of blood in the stool or change in stool habits or whatever, the GI docs are scoping. Like,
right.
I don't,
right. without
I
question.
I can't come up with a patient scenario that's sent to GI where they don't recommend just having a colonoscopy.
Because
it's just their like kind of their bread and butter. And it's invasive, but it's minimally so, you know, like it's just, and it's a safe procedure. Now there are risks. So there are, I do have some patients who have horror stories of a family member or even themselves who something terrible has happened with the colonoscopy. Like you can have perforations and stuff can happen, but there's risk to everything. And usually how I phrase that is, we didn't even talk about Cologuard. There's a, you know, stool-based colon cancer screening test that you can do that's good for 3 years instead of potentially 10 as a colonoscopy is. But I phrase it to people that there's risks to everything, and the risk of you having colon cancer and not finding it is so much greater than the risk of a potential complication from a colonoscopy.
Right. You put yourself in more risk just driving to the doctors that day.
It doesn't make sense for that to be the reason for you not to get one. If that's
I actually looked up the fatality rate due to colonoscopies before my procedure.
Oh my gosh. Why?
I was just curious. I think it's like 3 per 100,000. So
that seems higher than I would expect.
Than you would expect. Well, it would have to be a really bad day for you.
Well, and you have to understand not every colonoscopy is happening in a healthy person who's going in for colon cancer screening. Some colonoscopies are happening because they need to go in and find a GI bleed that's bleeding.
Right.
So I wouldn't even put that out there. That 300,000, because we're talking about people who are sick and in the hospital and having scopes for many other reasons.
Gotcha. Good point. Okay. I think we have covered this shitty subject, unintended.
You're waiting
completely. For your newsletter readers, they can read about it further there, including the study I referenced. And if any of the podcast listeners want to subscribe to your newsletter, they should go to aspiremd.com. Is it
aspiremddirect.com? And just shoot us an email, and we can get you signed up for the newsletter.
Perfect. Okay. Well, go enjoy the rest of your weekend. Give Molly, Rose, and the rest of your kids a hug from me and a kiss from me. And we will look forward to seeing you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good weekend.
You too. Ciao. Love you.
Love you too.
Bye. Thanks again for listening. You can visit thedoctorandad.com. That's spelled thedrandad.com. For show notes to any of our podcasts, as well as other useful info on extending health span. Now the legal disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. And no doctor-patient relationship is formed. Use of this information in show notes is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not disregard or delay taking medical advice or treatment for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their medical professional for any such conditions. We also want you to know that we take no funding from any product or service that may be mentioned on the Doctor and Dad podcast.